Wine. I miss beer, mate. Can't we risk going to the pub?
Maybe tomorrow when it's all over, Conrad grumbled. We can drown our sorrows or celebrate with copious amounts of beer, depending on the verdict. Right now, I can't even think about it without feeling sick.
Conrad sat, elbows on the table, swilling wine rhythmically around the bowl of his glass.
I think it'll be okay. You could see how much the jury believed Lorna when she spoke. They know she wasn't lying, and her barrister played a clever hand, I thought. As for that other devious cow...
Naomi Woods?
No, I was thinking of the spiky-nosed Mrs. Steele. She's something else. Intelligent, but incredibly dislikable. I think that will be Naomi's downfall, because Mrs. Steele is like the villain in a pantomime, and Naomi is her evil twin. They told lie after lie, and I wasn't fooled for 1 minute by the ridiculous suggestion that Lorna and Naomi were old friends, and that Naomi, of all people, was persuaded to join Lorna in blackmail and revenge for money. Naomi doesn't need money. The arguments were completely flawed.
You say that, Nettie, but when they produced Lorna's and Naomi's phone messages from that night, the texts quite clearly showed they plotted it all together.
Barney poured a couple of glugs of red wine into Annette's glass while she cut more bread to go with the slowly disappearing cheese mountain laid out on a large wooden board in the middle of the kitchen table in the cottage at Llan Rhug. The brie had all but disappeared, leaving Port Salut, Wensleydale with cranberries, and some vintage cheddar to be finished off with the selection of chutneys and olives that Annette had supplied for a late evening snack.
Any idiot could work out that Naomi had stolen the phone, sent messages back and forth, then dropped the phone back through Lorna's letterbox before Naomi then drove back to the management centre. Harry Drysdale wiped the floor with that piece of evidence. The timings of the text fitted exactly with the two of you having dinner, then the CCTV footage in the car park when you were snogging. Lorna couldn't have sent any messages. It's a long stretch of the imagination to believe that Lorna would want anything to do with that devious, manipulative bitch Naomi.
Conrad spat crumbs across the table.
It's more unbelievable that an intelligent young man like Josh Hawley fell for her.
He had just taken a bite of crusty bread.
Not only fell for her, but is practically mesmerized by her, just like my Freddy.
Oi, spit somewhere else! You put crumbs in my wine, you thoughtless twerp!
Barney pretended to be cross.
Sorry, didn't see it.
Lame excuse for bad manners, Cyclops. Didn't your mother teach you not to talk with your mouth full?
Now, children, stop bickering and tell me what the detective man said today.
Annette chided the pair. Gethin Anwell had managed to snatch a couple of precious minutes with Conrad and Barney in the gents' toilet at the courts, shortly after the judge adjourned the hearing for the day. He disclosed in hushed tones that there was likely to be an appeal into the conviction of Matthew Hawley, based on the outcome of the case against Lorna Yates and Naomi Woods.
Detective Chief Inspector Anwell is a bloody decent chap. His colleagues who had investigated Helena's murder have been watching the proceedings here with interest. They reckon there's a distinct possibility that Naomi used the same drug to instruct Matthew Hawley to kill his own wife. That's why he didn't remember anything. Naomi Woods had the motive, and given the evidence about her contact with the underground Chinese chemist, she had the means to kill Helena, and maybe Richard too.
Nah, it still doesn't make any sense that she would then risk all that wealth and stability to bring about your downfall or kill Freddy.
Annette sat back in her chair, wiping butter from her chins.
That's because you don't think like a psychopath, Conrad said with authority.
He had been wondering about exactly the same issue for the past 6 months, and concluded that Dr. Tyrrell had been the closest to explaining why Naomi had followed a path that inevitably led to her own arrest.
Containment. That was the word Sarah Tyrrell used. She said people with extreme disorders of personality seek boundaries or containment. They become out of control and driven by all the negative stuff. Envy, jealousy, anger, revenge, and the rest of it. But whatever they do, they don't seem to achieve a sense of fulfillment, so they do even worse things. Naomi experienced most satisfaction from being destructive and seeing the results. It's all been a game that's got out of control, and getting locked up will contain her.
What a load of old psychobabble bollocks, Barney snorted. She's a twisted, evil bitch. That's it. Don't dress it up in poxy medical lingo. She's a bad un.
Well said. Annette leant against Barney and pinched his cheek. And anyway, where is Tessa in all this?
Now that's a hell of a good question.
Miss Woods, you have told the court that the digital camera you were using on the night in question ran low on battery power, which is why you stopped filming. Can you explain why you left your so-called friend, Lorna Yates, in the hotel room when you departed from the hotel, drove your hire car to the station, and then caught a train to London?
Rupert Van Dahl had already been asking questions of Naomi Woods for 20 minutes as part of his cross-examination. She was the last witness in the case of the defence, and her testimony had generated far more interest in the courtroom than anyone else's, or so it seemed to those seated in the public gallery. Conrad, who had been more impressed with his barrister as each day of the hearing passed, watched closely. He could tell by the jury's faces that they approved of his barrister's approach and his character, as well as his arguments. Rupert Van Dahl had subtly introduced reasonable doubt in Lorna's favour and managed to emphasise Naomi's guilt without compromising his role in the prosecution.
It was part of the plan.
This plan seemed unnecessarily complicated. Did you ever consider that faking the kidnapping of Lorna Yates could have yielded better financial rewards than blackmail?
At last, Conrad caught a momentary flicker of irritation flash across Naomi's face.
No. This was her idea, not mine. She wanted to hurt him.
Naomi raised a finger towards where Conrad was sitting.
The court will note, for the record, that Naomi Woods has identified the victim, Mr. Conrad Neal.
You say that the idea was the work of Lorna Yates, but is it not true that you bought the camera, you accessed the drug through your contacts in the sex industry, and you misled Freddie Neal into believing you were Chloe Jordan in order to use him against his own father? Let us not forget that it was also you who carried out the application of the drug, you who filmed everything, and you who delivered a copy of the film to the newspapers. Is that correct?
Yes, but that was part of the setup to avoid Lorna being identified as the culprit.
Miss Woods, I feel I need to remind you that Lorna Yates was filmed by you assaulting and seriously wounding my client with a large knife. She cannot fail to have been identified.
There was a long pause, during which a staring contest between Naomi Woods and Rupert Van Dahl took place. He won.
I put it to you, Miss Woods, that Lorna Yates was an innocent victim in this case, and that the reason for your convoluted story is that you made several errors in your plan to bring about the destruction of my client's life. You accidentally filmed yourself. You couldn't resist sending threatening texts to him. And you have lied consistently in an effort to blame Lorna Yates, who you knew had spent years trying to rebuild her life from a shattered childhood.
Objection, my lord. Supposition.
The jury will disregard that last comment. Mr. Van Dahl, please ensure your statements are based on fact.
I do apologize, my lord.
Rupert Van Dahl looked down momentarily as if considering the risk of asking his next question.
The court has heard that you have no previous convictions and appear to have led a blameless life. What the jury hasn't heard so far is that you gave evidence in the murder trial of your former employer, Helena Chorston Hawley, that you were the last person to see Tessa Carlton alive when you both absconded from Willow Hall as teenagers, and that you were the person who found the body of Richard, the former colleague and younger brother of Helena Chorston Hawley. Are these facts correct?
Yes.
You seem to attract death, Miss Woods. Was it your intention to murder my client at the hands of Lorna Yates?
No, just to disfigure him.
At the hands of Lorna Yates?
That's not what I meant.
No further questions.
I thought I was going to be physically sick waiting for that bloody woman to give the verdict of the jury. Did she think she was on MasterChef giving the decision on who would make it through the competition to the next round? My heart still hasn't recovered. Conrad held out his shaking hands as proof. Thanks for giving us the place to ourselves last night, by the way. Much appreciated. Barney raised his pint glass.
No problem, mate. Me and Nettie booked a room at the Travelodge in Bethesda on the off chance anyway. We were so knackered, we didn't even go for a drink to celebrate. We grabbed a disgusting takeaway, ate it in bed, and slept for hours.
He slurped his beer before asking,
What did DCI Amwell want with you today? Can't he give it a rest?
Bloody excellent news is what he wanted to tell me, Barney Old Fruit. Naomi Woods, the evil bitch, is changing her plea to guilty regarding Freddy's murder, which means we probably won't have to go through all this agony again. For the icing on top of the cake of good tidings, the investigation into Tessa Carlton's disappearance is being considered as a possible murder. No body yet.
Fuck me.
Language. The ladies will hear you.
Conrad used his drink to indicate towards a corner table where Lorna was sitting with Annette, deep in conversation, punctuated by the odd hug.
How's Lorna?
Shell-shocked.
A bit like myself, I suspect. We were mobbed on the way out of court by the press, as usual. Luckily, Zachary had been contracted to drive me to and from the cottage yesterday. Otherwise, we wouldn't have made our getaway at all. What a good man he is. He'd put chocolates, flowers, and a hamper full of food in the car, as well as a whole suitcase full of Lorna's clothing. Thanks to Annette for that. He even played music all the way back to the cottage so we didn't have to try to make conversation. I couldn't believe he had taken the risk on the verdict. The only thing he said was,
Never in doubt, Mr. Neil.
Well, it wasn't.
It was agony.
Still, it's been good to know so many people had faith in our version of events. I had to turn my mobile phone off last night because I had so many messages, plus an indecent proposal from Gorgeous George. Apparently my scars turn him on. Barney grimaced as he laughed in response.
That poor boy. Nettie says you lead him on.
Come off it. You don't believe that for 1 minute. I even had a reasonably pleasant message from Delia.
Now that's unbelievable. How's the new life in town suiting her?
Dunno. You'll have to ask Eliza. Here she comes, old soppy bollocks in tow.
Conrad forced himself to shake hands with Eliza's boyfriend, Mason. The American accent still grated, as did the general boastfulness. Most of all, he despised the fact that his daughter's chosen man had a weak handshake, like a wet fish, thus inviting Conrad to ratchet up his vice-like grip and make Mason wince. Barney did the same, much to his friend's amusement.
Sorry we're late, Dad. Mason had an important call from the States and it took longer than we thought.
Should have left the wanker at home, then. Never mind. You're here now. Are you feeling okay about Lorna being with us?
More than okay. I'll introduce myself. You stay here and teach Mason about the delights of proper beer. He only drinks lager.
Our pleasure.
Barney piped up with a devilish grin spreading slowly across his face.
Mason, walk this way, lager boy, and let me help you with your future career. We can't have you intellectual types drinking lager. No one in this country or the whole of the UK will take you seriously as a professor of anything unless you drink real ale. Lesson one, never drink halves, always pints. Now then, we'll start you off with a golden ale. Looks harmless enough, doesn't it?
Conrad was pretending to listen to Barney's beer lesson, but his attention was captured by his daughter and Lorna meeting officially for the first time. He held his breath until interrupted.
Con, another pint?
Yes, please.
Conrad smiled amiably at the landlord, who was clearly trying hard not to be overwhelmed by the famous faces in his establishment, ones that had appeared on the front pages of every newspaper in the UK that morning. He rustled up enough courage to ask,
Will you be staying in the area for a few more days?
Most likely, until the dust settles. It's been a long haul, but I'm glad we're finally able to venture out for a drink. And you'll probably see us again tomorrow, unless the press get wind of where we are.
Don't worry, I've put a news embargo on the staff and the regulars. Any trouble from press intrusion and we'll throw the bastards out.
Chapter 41. The BBC reporter pushed a microphone into Conrad's face, catching him off guard as he descended the steps of the High Court in bright summer sunshine.
Mr. Neil, how does it feel knowing your efforts have finally been rewarded?
Conrad was able to switch easily into his professional presenter persona. His expression remained serious.
I'm relieved, of course, but mostly delighted that after 4 years, Matthew Hawley has finally got the justice he deserves. He thanked the reporter, put on his sunglasses, and moved off into the crowded street, determined not to be collared for any further impromptu interviews. His diary was already full of scheduled attendances for chat shows, current affairs programs, and ironically, for 2 real crime documentaries. One investigating the murder of Tessa Carlton, whose body was still missing, and the other investigating cases of crimes committed during states of automatism. That day in the High Court, it had been sobering listening to Naomi Woods again. Conrad had stared intently at her when she took the witness stand like a pro. This was the 3rd time in the dock in 18 months, and Conrad wondered if the notoriety of her crimes was feeding repetitively into her psychopathy. She seemed to revel in the notoriety and play to the crowd. As predicted, she had pleaded not guilty to the murder of Helena Chorston Hawley, even though the re-examination of the evidence had resulted in the successful appeal by Matthew Hawley and in Naomi's arrest for conspiracy to murder. She was found guilty. Allowing the courtroom to empty, he sat alone for a while in the gallery, not praying, but in quiet contemplation, savouring the end of the most dreadful chapter in his entire life. His thoughts were of Freddie, and his tears were for himself. As he was crossing the lobby, heading for the High Court's main exit, he was approached by Mrs. Steele, barrister for Naomi Woods.
"Mr. Neal, could I have a word in private?"
In a smart wood-panelled room, the officious Mrs. Steele handed over a package.
"My client instructed me to give this to you in the event that she was found guilty today. There's a short letter giving you permission to act as you see fit regarding the contents."
"That's what old Iron Breeches said?"
Annette queried as she loaded the first of the DVDs into the player. She and Conrad sat in semi-darkness in the editing suite.
"Just like old times, this, isn't it? Now the legal nightmares are done with, maybe we can actually finish the bloody documentary. The bosses are champing at the bit for us to be the first on air. Right, let's see what the bitch has sent."
Annette reached for a large packet of peanuts and shook some out into her hand. She sat back to watch the monitor with interest as she popped a few nuts into her mouth. "I thought you were on a diet."
"I am. Hang on. Wait a minute. Before we do this, what if the DVD is an unabridged version of the night you and Lorna were attacked? You could have one of those mind meltdown moments and be lost for days again."
"Good point. You sit with your finger on the stop button and I'll look away if it is." They didn't speak until the film started.
"Where the hell is this? And who's that?"
Annette asked, trying to make sense of the naked limbs on the screen. Conrad cocked his head to one side to compensate for the angle of the action in the film. "That looks very much like Helena being given a lesson by Naomi in the fine art of the blowjob, using a strap-on dick." Conrad was mesmerized by the scene playing out in front of him, during which Naomi could be heard making encouraging comments about Helena's technique, and then offering a suggestion about subtle improvements that she could make. "This means that Naomi knew exactly what Helena was doing. She taught her. Mistress and apprentice, Naomi helped her to catch and keep Matthew. I think I know where this is going."
"Do you? I'm too shocked to think anything,"
Annette said, rolling out of her chair and heading towards the door. She checked the corridor outside and then returned to her desk.
"Play the next one, but keep the volume down."
"Oh, shit. That's Josh with Helena riding him like a thing possessed. Listen." Naomi's laughing while she's filming it.
"How sick is that?"
"Turn it up a bit, a little louder so we can hear." Conrad and Annette huddled together as they watched the scene in front of them. They heard Naomi giving instructions.
"Well done, both of you. Very enjoyable to watch. But Helena, you're still rushing things. Take your time. Swivel round and face the other way. Enjoy the experience. Josh won't remember a thing, but you'll have the orgasm of your life. Then you can have another go on Daddy over there, and we'll see who's the best in your opinion."
The camera panned across the bedroom to where Matthew Hawley was sitting in a chair, watching his son have sex with his wife under the instruction of Naomi Woods.
"How long have I got?"
Helena asked,
panting slightly as she looked towards the camera. Naomi continued to film her as she rocked back and flicked her long hair out of her face. Helena wore a beaming smile.
"I'm loving this!"
Annette put one hand up to her mouth in shock. Conrad looked at her before pressing the stop button.
"Tell me you're thinking what I'm thinking."
"I can, if you're thinking that Helena and Naomi were abusing the father and the son for their own sexual pleasure, and it very much looks as if they drugged them."
That would explain why Naomi became so angry when Helena made a real play for Josh. They wanted the same man. Mystery solved.
"I find it weird that when you watch Josh, he seems to be enjoying himself, but he's drugged and won't remember any of it."
"Let me assure you, it is weird."
Whoever said the camera never lies was wrong. The two friends sat in silence thinking about the implications of what they had in their possession.
"What the hell are we going to do with these discs?" Conrad asked. "We can't show them as part of the documentary because neither of those poor men know they've been raped."
"You're so right. It's rape. Con, this is so bad."
"I know. What are we going to do? If we give it to the police, Naomi Woods bags herself another trip to court and more fame for her evil deeds. But if we do nothing, we're complicit in not reporting a serious crime."
Con and Annette pivoted their chairs to face each other.
"What a deplorable, black-hearted bitch. She knew this was the last turn of the screw. And do we believe what she says in that bloody letter about these being the only copies? She, or someone acting on her behalf, must have downloaded them from a computer somewhere."
"Apart from the one of Lorna and me, the police have never produced another of her films as evidence. Not even a laptop, and nothing on any phone. So, I don't know is the answer to your question."
Annette removed the DVD from the machine in front of her and wagged it in Conrad's face.
"Let's see what's on the other disc."
He recognized his car. The white Range Rover registration KON1 was shown parked between trees and bushes, only yards away from a dirt track. The person holding the camera walked towards the car where Freddy sat in the passenger seat, smiling and waving, fingers spread wide.
"Want to say something to your dad about your new job, Freddy?"
Naomi's distinctive sotto voice could barely be heard over the sound of the wind blowing the leaves in the trees.
"Yes, I do."
The car window lowered, allowing Freddy to rest his elbow on the opening as he looked directly into camera.
"Hello, Dad. I'm not sorry you refused to help me find some work at Channel 7. Fuck you. I've passed my interview and I'm joining Chloe in her new business as her sales and marketing assistant. We've found some offices for the West Country branch and I'll be staying here. You can keep your money. I'm not going back to uni after the summer. I'll be too rich to care. Now, if you don't mind, I'm about to get on with the rest of my life, and Chloe is going to show me something new."
Freddy made a V sign at the camera as he laughed excitedly.
"Come on, get in, girl. Put your lips around this."
There was a break in the filming before it recommenced, showing Freddy's immobilized torso, tied by his neck, with a blissful look on his face. In silence, Annette held Conrad's right hand as he wiped away the tears streaming down his left cheek.
"Bye-bye, Freddy."
Naomi's words ended the film. Finally, after several pain-laden minutes, Conrad gained control of himself enough to speak. He had made a decision.
"We destroy the DVDs, and we say nothing to a single living soul. Matthew Hawley has paid enough of a price. Let him keep his son and his dignity. Naomi doesn't have to win them all."
The end. The Camera Lies by A.B. Morgan. Narrated by Guy Mott. Published by Whole Story Quest, an imprint of W.F. Howes Limited. This work is copyrighted 2018 A.B. Morgan. This recording is copyrighted 2018 W.F. Howes Limited.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.